I'm going to introduce Patrick Neal, who is our speaker today. Our reading this morning is from the Reverend Dr. William Barber II, and this is from an interview that he did on WGBH radio in Boston. And I know that Jack and Linda are familiar with Jim and Marjorie, and this is part of their one of their interviews. Reverend Barber, if you look in our history, there has always been the need for persons, some persons, to decide. I'm not so much interested in left versus right, Democrat versus Republican, but decide how public policy lines up in terms of what I like to say being constitutionally consistent, morally defensible, economically just, and economically sane. In that sense, they had to shock the nation like a defibrillator shocks the heart, because people began to want to implement policies that are hardening us. Our consciousness, as Otto Scharmer says at MIT, we began to commit attention violence against the poor. We began to not recognize, as Dr. King said, that we are all inextricably bound together. What I was really speaking to is where we are right now in this country when you can actually run for office and your agenda can sound like this. If you elect me, I'm going to take your health care, even though by getting elected, I get free health care. I'm going to deny you a living wage. I'm going to attack you if you're an LGBTQ person. In a country where we've seen God shed his grace on you, I'm not going to have grace for the immigrant community. I'm going to deny racism and criminal justice. I'm going to suppress the right to vote. I'm going to castigate religion in a country that has no religious test. And then after I do all that, I'm going to make sure that you can get a gun quicker than you can vote. That represents a hardening of our heart of our democracy. It is a moral problem, not just a left-right problem. In this season when some of us want to harden and stop the heart of our democracy, we are being called, like our foremothers and fathers, to be moral defibrillators of our time. We must shock this nation with the power of love. We must shock this nation with the power of mercy. We must shock this nation and fight for justice for all. We can't give up on the heart of our democracy. Not now, not ever. Those are the words of Dr. Barber. Some of you have heard me speak about this little incident once before. In 1986, I broke my shoulder in a bicycle accident. My doctor was concerned that perhaps my bones were weakening due to a prescription medication I'd been taking for several years. He ordered a bone density test, which was a series of CAT scans of my sternum. I had the test late one day, and after a series of images were collected, I was told to get dressed. The tests were completed. I nearly finished dressing when the radiologist called me into the room where he was reviewing the scans, and he said, "There is a problem." These are not words you want to hear from a medical doctor. He showed me the last scan and explained what we were looking at, and then pointed to a shadow on my right kidney. "I'm not sure what that is," he said, "but it shouldn't be there." He sent me home with instructions to call my doctor the next morning, and so after a sleepless night, I called my doctor and was told I had an appointment with a urologist in 2 hours. By noon, I was told that I had a large tumor, probably cancerous, and whatever it was would require surgery to remove the kidney. Within a few days, I was on the operating table, and they removed the kidney and a lot of surrounding tissue. A couple of days later, the pathology report came back, and the tumor was renal cell carcinoma, a nearly universally fatal cancer, but it had not metastasized. My doctor said I was fortunate that we had caught it early. Otherwise, he said, we would have made your life miserable for a couple of years, and you would have died anyway. I have considered every day since then a gift and an opportunity. And I'm reminded of the words of the 20th century American author William Arthur Ward when he said, "Today is the most unusual day. because we have never lived it before, we will never live it again. It is the only day we have. So I now try to live each day as if it is an opportunity to show up, to do something good, to be a positive force in the world. And so my question to you this morning is, what are you doing to show up, to be a positive force for good in this world? What will you do today? What will you do tomorrow? Originally, this sermon was going to be about the need to show up for Wolf. God knows we need to do that. Or whoever you think is there knows we need to do that. Our fellowship asks us to volunteer. We talk about the virtue of volunteering at the start of every service. We have clipboards available downstairs filled with opportunities to volunteer. Teams and committees recruit volunteers for a myriad of activities, from cleaning the parking lot to becoming a visiting steward for our pledge drive. WOLF does exist only because of volunteer efforts of our members and friends of this congregation. WOLF abounds with opportunities to give of your time and your talents to support this caring community, this sanctuary, this very special place of sustenance. So yes, we need to show up for WOLF, and I encourage you to do that. As your stewardship chair, I really encourage you to do that. But over the last 2 weeks and 2 days since the inauguration, yes, it's only been that short period of time, since the inauguration of Donald John Trump as the 45th President of the United States, it has become apparent to me that we as Unitarian Universalists are being called to show up and stand up for everything we believe in, for the seven principles of our faith. Look at those principles. You'll find them right here on the back of your order of service. Go ahead right now. Take a look at those. Look at the very first one. The very first one talks about the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Right. As long as you're not a woman, or a Muslim, or an immigrant, or a refugee, or a Mexican, or a person with a disability, or gay, or the list goes on and on. And you can continue this analysis. You can do it for yourself right there. All seven of them are laid out very nicely for you. You can continue that, look at our principles. But bottom line, everything we stand for as Unitarian Universalists is under attack, and we are called to show up. We're being called to give our time, our talents, and our treasure to support, lift up, protect women, people of color, the poor, the refugee, the immigrant, LGBTQ folk, prisoners, the differently abled, and the vulnerable, whoever they are and wherever they are. We are called to protect our planet from the ravages of pollution and industrialization. We are called to protect our democracy, including the right to vote. We are called to promote world peace, to witness against war and American imperialism. We are called, my friends, we are called to show up and stand up. The task before us is daunting. It would be easy, oh so easy, to pull in our heads, to not show up. In 2 years or 4 years or 8 years, this long winter of our discontent will be over. Maybe. The powers in Washington would like nothing better than for us to withdraw. The press has been told that they are the enemy and they should shut up. We are barraged with untruths and alternate facts in the hope we will believe. We are being asked to bow down, kneel before the king. I'm reminded of the Bible story from the prophet David, Daniel. Allow me to modernize this story just a little bit because the parallels are just too rich to pass up. There once was a king whose wealth was enormous. He built great towers with his name and his likeness emblazoned on them. His ego and his narcissism even surpassed his wealth, and everything he did was great and grand and beautiful. He asked all people, even other kings, to supplicate themselves before him, to bow down to him. He sat in his great towers and looked out, pleased with himself, full of himself, signing many great executive orders and tweeting random thoughts. But he saw three young men, actually a lot of young men and young women and old men and old women, who were refusing to bow down. One of them looked a lot like a federal judge in Seattle, Washington. They would not bow down. They did not respect him. He ordered them to bow down, but they refused. Despite everything the king did, they refused to bow down, and eventually Daniel tells us the king was so awed that he changed his ways. If only we could be so lucky. Now, our king is not Nebuchadnezzar, and we are not Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And I doubt that our king will change his ways. But the lesson, my friends, from Daniel is that we can't give up. We must resist. We must remain strong and resolute. We can't bow down. As Reverend Barber says, we can't give up on the heart of our democracy. We can't bow down. Not now, not ever. Thank you. I will have to say or admit that there is a little bit of Southern Christian preaching in this old Oregonian. So what do we do? I think it all begins with us as individuals and our decision to show up. And that decision to show up is a decision of the heart. It starts with the heart, and it starts with love. The hymn following my sermon this morning is going to be Love Will Guide Us. Let me share with you the middle verse from that hymn. If you cannot sing like angels, if you cannot speak before thousands, you can give from deep within you, you can change the world with your love. I firmly believe that. So I think resistance starts with love. Reverend Bill Sinkford, last summer, was speaking at the General Assembly of the Unitarian Universalist Association, and he said, resistance is what love looks like in the face of hatred. Resistance is what love looks like in the face of violence. So we start with love. I've had an exchange of Facebook posts with several of my high school classmates since the election, and a few of you have actually seen some of that. I can't call these discussions, but I certainly can't call them dialogues. I am the flaming liberal in a sea of conservatives. I don't understand them, and they don't understand me. I am shocked, appalled, and dismayed at their posts, and I'm certain they feel the same way about mine. I've been trying to find a way to engage them so that we can at least have a meaningful conversation. But 2 weeks ago, yesterday, Reverend Tracy and Annabelle and I were standing in the pouring rain in Waterfront Park with the mud and water sucking at our shoes as we awaited the start of the Women's March. We were talking about this seeming impasse between liberals and conservatives, why they couldn't see, they being the conservatives, couldn't see the obvious truth of our arguments. Finally, Tracy said, I think we need to change the conversation from a discussion of issues to one of morality. No one, she continued, would want to see their neighbor dying from hunger or a lack of medical care. Morality is at the heart of the social justice work Reverend Barber calls us to do. In his book, The Third Reconstruction, Barber writes, we cannot come together to work for the common good by ignoring our deepest values. Rather, we grow stronger in our work together as we embrace those things we most deeply believe, standing together where our values unite us and learning to respect one another where our traditions differ. Barber describes his efforts to help workers in a textile mill form a union. An economic and political analysis helped me to see more clearly the multiple factors that contributed to the workers' suffering, Barber writes. but only a moral analysis offered the clarity that would compel us to do something. We weren't trying to start a union simply because it was the smartest thing to do or the most politically advantageous thing to do. We were going to start a union because it was the right thing to do. So I think we need to move our resistance from a discussion of liberal versus conservative, Democrat versus Republican, good versus bad, left versus right, to a moral discussion of what is good and right. Our liberal outrage over the executive orders on immigration and travel, I believe, are a good example. The discussion is focused on how these orders are illegal, how they fly in the face of our Constitution and the traditions of the United States, how they're singling out a religion, and how they're anti-Muslim. Where in all of that discussion is a discussion of the moral values we share as Americans? The bans and the comments about Mexicans and others smell to me of racism. Xenophobia is rampant. These actions are tainted with the worst in American history, like the genocide of our native people, the enslavement of more than 4 million Africans, the exclusion of the Chinese, turning away Jewish children fleeing the Nazis, and the internment of 125,000 Americans whose only crime was they were of Japanese ancestry. No American today would support any of these actions. At least I hope so. Here is the basis of our moral arguments. You know, to the extent that any attempts at moral arguments or moral discussion has been made, they've been overshadowed by logic and legal reasoning. That's all good. But our discussion has been diverted to mundane things like the number of people involved. One is too many. One is immoral. One thing I've not been doing with my Facebook friends is trying to find our shared moral values and build a dialogue from there, and bad on me. I'm not naive enough to assume and believe that a moral approach will always work, but I know for certain that the other approaches are not working. It will serve us all well to remember the advice of Michelle Obama: when they go low, we go high. While I'm talking about the nature of resistance, in addition to love and morality, I must add nonviolence. Jonathan Haidt, a prominent social psychologist at New York University, has studied morality for many years. Through his research, he's identified 5 factors that determine an individual's view of morality. Liberals, he contends, rely on only 2 of these 5 factors, while conservatives rely on all 5 factors. Maybe this summer we'll get into a discussion of some of this. One of the results of this difference, Haidt says, is that liberals are okay and, in fact, welcome change and chaos, and we're not very concerned with structure and order, while conservatives fear change and chaos and value stability, structure, and order. Both are legitimate positions. Whenever our liberal resistance is seen as disturbing the conservative sense of order they resist, if our resistance turns violent, the conservatives will meet that with more violence. Gandhi and MLK both understood the need for civil disobedience and protest and resistance to be nonviolent. All of this is not to say that we shouldn't rock the boat. Far from it. True democracy is messy and chaotic. Our rhetoric and our signs to protest may shock the sensibilities of some conservatives. Our rallies and marches may inconvenience motorists and bring out counter-protests. Our sit-ins or stand-ins may result in our arrest. And this is all good. It is part of being a moral defibrillator. But when we taunt and physically attack the police or allow the destruction of property, we shut down any hope of moving to a moral dialogue and build an increasingly resistant opposition. Before I move on to talk about what we can do to resist the agenda of the current administration, I want to address one other issue my Facebook friends have raised about my recent social justice activity. You are just one person, they say. You're not going to make a difference. The only value is the exercise you're getting. You're going to wear out a pair of shoes. The people voted and you lost, so quit being a sore loser and get on board. one of them actually said, whatever you do, it is just a drop in the bucket. Uh-huh. Now we actually have an area of agreement. Whatever I do, whether it's writing letters or making phone calls, attending lobbying days, participating in rallies and marching, or financially contributing to social justice organizations, it is just a drop in the bucket. I think people who say it's just a drop in the bucket assume we need full buckets to do any good. And I would probably quarrel with that assumption, but the reality is even a full bucket is filled with just drops. Whether your drop is the first in the bucket or the last and makes the bucket overflow or is somewhere in between, each drop in the bucket eventually fills the bucket. Enough drops in enough buckets, and as the prophet Amos wrote, justice will roll down like water, and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream, and my drops and your drops will be a part of that stream. This is an amen. So, right on, Brother Neil. Oh, we'll convert this congregation. So, how do we marshal morality and nonviolence to add our drops to the buckets of social justice? How do we show up to make a difference as we work from the seven principles of our faith? Actually, I think that is exactly where we start. If you haven't done so already, you, every one of you, can sign the UUSC Declaration of Conscience. You can find this declaration today. Take action. Show up. To find the declaration, all you need to do is go to uua.org/action. That's uua.org/action. If you can't remember any of that, just put in UUA in your browser and you'll get there. Find that declaration and sign it. It's easy. In addition to that, today, this very day, you could also write and send letters and cards or email to our members of Congress, to our governor. Suzanne Bonamici showed up to make a special appeal to get a waiver from the State Department so an Iranian family could come to Oregon, to Thornbecker, to get treatment for their sick child who was going to die. Jeff Merkley is showing up to lead the opposition to the nomination of Neil Gorsuch to be the justice on the Supreme Court. Both Ron Wyden and Jeff Merkley are showing up to lead the lead efforts to thoroughly examine every cabinet appointment. Betsy DeVos will be voted on this week, and there is a chance we can stop her nomination. Governor Kate Brown showed up to strengthen the orders for state employees to not assist the federal government in identification and possible deportation of any illegal immigrants. Send these officials messages of your support for their brave stands. They're putting it out there for us. These are all actions you and you and you and you and me can take today, this super day. Why not join the WIFF Social Justice Committee and get involved in all kinds of social issues? Join the WIFF Racial Justice Coordinating Committee and work to support our racial justice initiatives. Join our farm workers' activities. There are many opportunities to make direct contributions to the health, safety, and security of these vulnerable members of our community. Talk to the folks at the social justice table after the service today. They'll be right downstairs. If all of this is too much, how about joining our backpack program, or even just remember to bring a couple of cans of food to put in the basket out there? I've been thinking about starting to make sandwiches and distributing sack lunches and bottled water to the homeless in Beaverton. All any of this takes is just a little bit of our time and a willingness to show up. And if all of this is still too much, today, this very day, send a check, a small check. Every little bit helps. But send a check to Planned Parenthood or the Southern Poverty Law Center or the ACLU or the NAACP or whatever your favorite social justice charity happens to be. So make your drop in the bucket today. Plan to make another one tomorrow and the next day too. Show up for justice. Show up for our faith. In 2010, Barack Obama was addressing his health care issues. And he said, now, since we took on this issue a year ago, there have been plenty of folks in Washington who've said the politics is just too hard. They've warned us we may not win. They've argued now is not the time for reform. It's going to hurt your poll numbers. How is it going to affect Democrats in November? Don't do it now. Obama continued, my question to them is, when is the right time? If not now, when? If not us, who? And so my question, my last question to you this morning, those of you right here in this room, is the same. If not now, when? If not us, who? Please join me for a moment in meditative thought or prayer. Spirit of life, great mystery at the heart of things, may we find the strength to remember how we have triumphed and how we have failed at the tasks of social justice. May we find the courage to know as much of the truth about what is happening as we can bear. Let us find the courage to answer the call of love once again, to stand against hate and resist the violence the world urges us to accept. Let us resist the temptation to bow down and find the courage to show up and stand up. This is our country and our world, and all the people of this world are our sisters and brothers and siblings. Let us find a way to live together within the all of it and allow love to call us on toward peace and justice and mercy and compassion. May it be so. Amen.
Thank you so much, Patrick. We have about 10 minutes for questions. I'm going to take the first one because I have the mic. I just want to confirm what you're saying in terms of the research neurologically. When people are arguing politically, it activates the same areas of the brain that represent identity. And so when you want to convince someone that their political beliefs are wrong, it's like asking them to become someone they aren't. And that's not going to get anywhere. And so the moral piece is the only way to move ahead.
It is a difficult piece. Because, as Jonathan Haidt points out, the way liberals construct morality and the way conservatives construct morality is different. And so, and this is way too much to get into in this sermon, but I do, maybe this summer we'll explore that a little bit more because it's very fascinating.
One more quick person to thank. It's possible to sign on to the email of the judge in Seattle and thank him because he's going to be deluged with hate mail.
Amen.
I just wanted to share with you, in case you haven't heard about Indivisible, I've been involved in organizing an Indivisible group, and the purpose of that is to pressure your Congress people. And so if you just go online, go to Indivisible Guide, every week they send you a couple of action items, current bills and things that are coming up so that you can call. And I think that's why people are being deluged in Congress with calls, so let's keep it up.
So in 2 weeks at our congregational meeting, we're going to be asked to vote on a way that we can show up collectively. And that's by joining an organization called Emerge, which is the Interfaith Movement for Immigrant Justice. And Linda and I and some of the members of the Social Justice Committee at noon will be talking about this organization. And I think it's a way that we can put drops in the bucket, Patrick, but put our collective drops in the bucket and fill it up.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Forrest Waldman.
Well, I'm one of those people that has a hard time doing stuff. I got kids and it just gets crazy. But I was just a simple little thing. I was at a grocery outlet and I had a cart full of food. And I happened to have a bunch of lines full and I looked behind me and I saw the guy behind me didn't have anything really. And I said, oh, if you just have one or two things in front of me. I hadn't even, didn't even make eye contact. And he just starts going, oh, no. And then this woman starts talking. And I turn and it's an Arabic middle-aged man and an older Arabic woman. She's got her head all covered and just little old wrinkled face. And she just starts smiling at me and talking. She says, oh, she is saying, God bless you. She is saying, oh, thank you. And God be with you. And I just, I'm like, okay, all I did was say, go in front of me. And it stuck with me for over a week now. I just think about it all the time. So it's just a little thing. And obviously it made a lot to them to have somebody say, go in front of me. So
absolutely. Resistance is not hard. And it's everywhere. And again, it starts with where Samara started, with love.
If you haven't already heard about it, there's an organization called Organizing for Action. And they are going to be having a meeting at the Hillsdale Library this Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. And the model is to divide people up into workable groups like on climate action, women's issues, immigration and equality, and there's about six different areas. And it's a nationwide movement. And if you're curious, look it up online. It's Organizing for Action.
Today I brought the sheet music for a string band. We're playing at the end of this month, February 26th, and I wrote a new song called Make Wolf Happen. I think your words today have written the third and the fourth verse, so thank you so much. It's a great topic. I'll be out at the front door if anybody wants to join the string band.
I'm curious, as a off-the-boat immigrant, how many other off-the-boat immigrants are in this room? Am I the only one? Wow.
Welcome, David.
Well, I've been here a long time, despite the accent. But my children are struggling with making the switch. They've delayed, unfortunately, cashing in their green cards until when it might be rather difficult. They're in their 50s now, and they're making a switch to citizenship at a time when it might be very difficult. I'm wondering if there are others of you with similar stories to tell, but obviously not.
Olga certainly also.
So my daughter and I went to a concert just last week, one of our favorite musicians, and he played a song that he, I guess, hastily put together a couple weeks back. And it follows along the same line of just a single drop of water in the bucket. But the course of it is, let's be the sand and the gears for the next 4 years. Because it doesn't take much to slow everything down and to make it extremely hard to do things. So anyway, it was wonderful to hear, and anyway, great talk.
Amen, Tom.
thank you, Patrick. I love the whole concept of sand in the gears for next 3 years. I love that. But also the using love as your defibrillator. I think that's really, really good. That just reminds me of so many things that we have all done and we could still do and can do in the future. But also because my passion is kids, I just want to put another plug in for the backpack program. If you participate and you look at these children, 2017 folks and kids are still hungry or doing something really, really wrong. But you look at these little faces, and these are underserved families. These are immigrant children, Somali children, Hispanic children. Who knows what their status is, but they wouldn't be needing these backpacks if things were fair.
Thanks, Patrick. I have a comment. I think sometimes it's easy to get overwhelmed by all of the opportunities out there to help and to know, well, should I be giving money? Should I be giving my time? Should I be doing something on my own? And I think that even if it's letting someone in front of you at the grocery store or smiling or, like, every little thing can make a difference. And instead of being hard on ourselves, like, oh, I'm not doing enough, you know, I was catching myself feeling like, oh, my gosh, like, I could be doing so much more. And I think it's like at the beginning of the year, everyone wants to work out every day. And then it stops because you get hard on yourself because you feel like you're failing. But if you set more reasonable goals or just, like, focus on the little things that you can do, I think will make a more lasting impact. And yeah, so thank you for your talk. I appreciate it.
It's absolutely true, Laurel. And those little things, those little choices we make, all are going to make a difference. They're all going to make a difference.
Patrick, I just wanted to thank you for the emphasis on love and the linking of resistance to love, because I've been noticing in myself that resistance and rage and ridicule go together really nicely. And over the long haul, that's as much against our principles as the thing we're resisting. So I really appreciate your positive emphasis.
If we truly believe in the inherent worth and dignity of every person, you may not want to hear this, but we have to believe in the inherent worth and dignity of Donald Trump and of his administration. They are people. They are people. And if we don't, just to follow up on what Kim's saying, if we don't honor that, we're digging ourselves a very deep hole that we cannot get out of. We have to meet them somewhere.
My son posted something the other day on Facebook that I found very helpful, and it was an article about self-care during these trying times. And the gist of it was, you can't do everything. You can't keep up with every single thing that's happening in the news. You're going to burn yourself out if you try. And it suggested that it's okay to take a break. It's okay if you have one day you don't listen to the news at all or do anything at all. Because if you don't do that, you will eventually just burn out. Your mind can't take that for 4 years. So I hope we all remember that. I know I feel overwhelmed and I feel like I'm not doing enough and I just want to do something and I don't know what to do. And I find myself addicted to MSNBC and CNN, you know. And I have to say, okay, this afternoon I'm going to sit down and read poetry. Or this afternoon I'm going to spend an hour in meditation. Or I'm going to go out and take the dog for a walk. Or I'm going to get away. Because if you don't do that, you're not going to last it out. And it's very, very important that we last.
Did Annabelle put you up to saying that?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'm thinking that one of the things that I could do is spread William Barber's message. Is that available online?
Yes. If you Google William Barber, or whatever search engine you use, William Barber, there are a number of his speeches that are on YouTube, a number of things that he's said and done. Something that we are ever so slowly, the wheels of congregational polity move slowly at Wolf, but we are moving towards perhaps having a whole congregation read of William Barber's book. So stay tuned. Maybe down the road we'll do that. But certainly look on YouTube. You listen to a couple of them. Be careful, because you're going to want to go zooming out of the house and protesting right down the street.
Thank you, Patrick, for your talk today. I'm one of those people who has been so overwhelmed and so upset that I have hidden my head in the sand. I have spent the past 2 weeks and 2 days watching reruns of the Dick Van Dyke Show. I've gone back, just back in time to before all this, to a simpler time. And I appreciate your inspiration, and I think that today has helped me to start the process of coming back out and showing up again. And thank you for that, Patrick.
We've got time for one question, I think, Beth.
I feel a little guilty being the last question because I'm very new. I'm one of the people that turned up right after the election because I knew that UU was a space where people were into social justice, and I wanted to be in a community where we could do that stuff together. And I just wanted to put forward, because we haven't talked about it, that one thing that most of us in this congregation have is white privilege. And there was a lot of talk after the Women's March congratulating everybody on how peaceful it was, as if a lot of that wasn't how the cops approached it, because the cops do not approach a Black Lives Matter march the way that they approach their moms and their mother-in-laws and their sisters-in-law out there in pink hats marching. And one thing, usually we have to think of our white privilege as something to be aware of and know that it's hurting people without our realizing it, and that it's blinding us. And it's one way that we can kind of use it for good is by going out there and being in solidarity with people of color and being with vulnerable people when they're on the street, because it's not just expressing solidarity and letting them know that we care. It's also making it more likely that the cops are going to treat them with respect. We can put ourselves between vulnerable people and injustice physically. And obviously not everyone's able to do that, and, you know your limits, but if you can, and that's something we can do. And I sit in a coffee shop hearing every single table full of respectable middle-aged white ladies talking about what they can do, and I think, yes, the great tide of respectable middle-aged white ladies. We're just gonna roll over them. So get out there. Thank you so much for being such a welcoming community.
I do want to just say, the Racial Justice Coordinating Committee is taking on the whole notion of white privilege and white fragility. And if this is a topic that interests you, and it should interest every one of us because we are, yep, we're all filled with it. Almost all of us are filled with it. It's something we need to talk about. So we are doing that. And absolutely, just to follow up on that comment, it was one thing to march with the women 2 weeks ago. It was quite another thing when I marched last week with the Albina ministries, but certainly many, many, many more people of color. The march was led by people of color. It was a whole different experience. The police didn't behave differently, but they sure looked at us differently. Thank you.